This is Shutters Inc. with Bruce Williams and Glyn Lavender.
Hi, and welcome to episode 410 of Shutters Inc. This is Bruce Williams from ShuttersIncPodcast.com, recording on a Wednesday night just for something different. Just to throw Mr. Glyn Lavender completely out of whack. From creativephotoworkshops.com.au, how are you, Mr. Lavender?
I told you, I'm busy finding links. Don't bother me. Oh, no, I didn't say that, did I? No, I am that I am, and that which I am is what I is.
I am, I said. Yes. Okay. How's your week been? Secret squirrel's out of the bag?
Secret squirrel is out of the bag, finally. And so I've been sort of kind of semi-busy doing a few little bits with that. And still got other stuff that they still need me to do.
Oh, okay.
So fiddle. So
I thought you were done with it all.
I was hoping I was done with it weeks ago. So we should tell him. One of our links this week, I'll send the link, is that Tamron this week announced the new Tamron 17-35 2.8-F4 OSD, whatever that stands for full frame a la 35mm sensor size cameras.
Whew.
Which is a nice piece of kit, I might say. And I was asked a couple of months ago if I would be interested in doing the promo shots for the launch.
Wow.
So they'd send from Japan to me a sample, a couple of versions of the lens, pre-production version of the lens.
Right.
And a camera that had been tuned to work specifically with that lens because it was pre-production. It wasn't the finished biz.
So tuned in what way?
Well, I imagine things like micro focus and stuff like that. It would be my assumption. So that's, I didn't ask because I don't care.
but whatever they do surely has to be built into the lens because people who buy the lens are going to have cameras that were built before the lens was built and therefore
but the firmware
in the camera isn't going to be up to date.
This is that specific. Well, I mean, this is the vagaries of every single camera and lens you buy.
Right.
So there's always going to be some nuance. So if you can get a lens chart out and a micro adjustment tool and be able to connect it to your laptop to do micro adjustments to how the camera focuses, you can probably improve the sharpness of your lenses.
Oh, okay.
My mate Malcolm did that with six of his lenses last year.
Yep.
But then, of course, he put it onto a different body and they were out differently. So it's a slippery slope should you choose to go down it.
Sure.
But, yeah, he started doing that sort of stuff. And, that's what some people do. They're getting that sort of guff. And they're worried.
Yeah, I did it with all my lenses when I got my A850.
You're one of those knobs.
Yeah.
It would do that sort of stuff. So that's
actually, you know what? You have just reminded me that when I bought my replacement 20mm wide angle after mine got stolen in Paris, I have not done that for the new lens. I really should.
And have you noticed a difference?
No.
No, so don't bother. When you think about it. So it's had absolute zero impact, except that your knobbishness felt better about itself.
Quite possible.
Something like
that. Cool. So you like the lens?
Look, I love the lens. I think that for the target market, so this is going to come out at about $600 US.
Right.
Which equates to about $1,000 Australian.
Okay.
To which people are already bleating on the internet, well, $600 US doesn't equal $1,000 Australian. Well, it does. Because $600 ex-tax US, add tax, add shipping, and add conversion. And we're talking about there's about $40 or $50 price difference probably between the two. Right. And we have free health insurance, free schools.
Yes, which America doesn't have.
We don't have a lot of other problems, shall we?
Yeah.
So that's worth $50.
Yeah. Cool.
So the good thing about it is, I mean, I love ultra wide angle lenses, which is why they approached me, I think, in the first place, because I love my 15-30 so much.
Yeah.
And it came as a bit of a surprise because Tamron Australia didn't know anything about it. They were sort of heard about it the same time I did. So I don't even know how they even found me.
Wow.
And they approached me. They said they wanted to send this. They wanted me to quote what it cost to do the shoot with no idea about what was actually going to be involved, which is kind of tricky to do. Yeah. So I kind of guesstimated what they would want based on a couple of the videos. They said some videos and some samples of some guy walking across a mountain with a goat or something like that. Something like that.
Right.
I'm sorry, in a coat. He's shooting mountain goats and some mountain, a drone flying over the top of him. So he's out for a day taking photos, basically. And so that's got, so I kind of quoted based on that. And they wanted a video guy to follow me around. And that's why I said it turned into this massive production, because the weather turned massively inclement straight afterward.
Yep.
And
yep.
They wanted multiple locations rather than a single location. They wanted 15 to 20 images minimum. Plus five lifestyle product style images, in a basically a 14-day time period.
Yeah,
and that 14 days included having to ship the gear from Japan.
Oh, what?
Which took about four of those 14 days. So, and then it rained continually for the first 7 of those days, including sleet and howling wind and rain, which is why I had to give up and fly up to the Gold Coast for a couple of days and shoot in some sunshine. Just out of hope of, and even then I had to ask for a couple extra days because it was just beyond. Yeah, I'm sending them videos to prove. Yeah, I'm down a coastline, absolutely howling wind. Yeah, I'm almost sideways, pouring rain, and I'm saying, "I'm out here trying to do a landscape shoot," and it's a bit. And I'm yelling into the phone, and you can hardly hear me. That's how loud the wind noise was.
Yeah,
so I gave them a good impression that, well, maybe the weather's a little inclement. And what would have been nice, I was thinking, give me a budget to fly me to Sri Lanka for a week and a half, a budget to get around, and I'll take you some amazing shots for your bloody launch.
Yeah,
make me shoot in local to where I live, where there's not an awful lot, in the middle of howling winter. You're not going to get a great deal. So I'm really disappointed with the end results. I mean, it's not stuff I would ever want to put out under my name, but the conditions were, I mean, as I said, I shoot people. They didn't want people. I don't shoot landscapes. They wanted landscapes. Everything I shoot is dark and moody or black and white. They didn't want black and white or moody.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was,
Or identifiable landmarks.
So it was, and stuff like graffiti you can't have, or business names or anything identifiable that as a brand or an artwork. So it was certainly a challenge. It's the most challenging brief I've had because there's so many things beyond your control. And then add to that, you're not allowed to edit the images. So beyond basic dust spot removal, a bit of contrast, a bit of shadows and highlights, maybe a bit of saturation, maybe a bit of color balance. But there's no mega layers, luminosity mask, all the stuff that all the other landscape dudes did to make their landscape photos look great.
Yep,
I couldn't do that. So you're competing with pumped up images to basically as shot images, and it's never gonna in this these images would have looked fine 15 years ago, 10 years ago, 5 years ago, maybe even before the luminosity mask and the intense manipulation of images to pretty much every landscape you see on Instagram and Facebook these days. Now they just don't compare because
You allowed to shoot with any filters, or was that a no-go?
I could put an ND filter on, like an ND filter, I could do that.
Yep.
So I did some slow, 30-second long shots with those, but that's really about it. And you don't really want to put filters on because it can change the performance of the lens.
Sure.
So it's not an ideal scenario. But there's other constraints. They don't want you shooting above 100 ISO if possible. They don't want you shooting above 5.6 if possible. 7.1 is the absolute worst case scenario kind of thing.
Why? That makes no sense.
Once again, it's a pre-production lens. It's not the final product. It's got whatever. It might not be complete. Who knows?
But why limitations on aperture?
For whatever reasons they feel it was necessary. I didn't ask. I just did.
See, that bothers me. As a potential consumer, I want to see how that lens performs at all apertures. I don't want to only see the wide open stuff.
I shot some at f/16 just to stuff them.
Yeah, but clearly they're not going to use those images.
They are. They're doing F, so it's like, but it's like, I'm going to shoot what it needs to be shot to get the shot.
Yeah.
Not because, and if you don't use the image, well, that's bad. Like, I've shot the shot, but I'm shooting the shot what's needed to shoot, not what the brief is, and I don't care.
Fair enough, too.
I'll use it myself. to showcase the lens if it doesn't suit what you guys want.
Yeah, fair enough.
And so they chose like 17 images. And then they came back, after meticulous planning, they came back and said, okay, we've chosen these 17 images. And then, four or five days ago, they came back, oh, we can't use 9 of the 17 images because there's problems with them. And that's all they said. And this is the other problem as well. I'm dealing with someone who doesn't speak English.
Yeah.
Translated into English not very clearly and not very long sentences because they don't speak English. They're keeping it very brief. So, you misread stuff. You don't understand exactly what they're trying to say. They don't really know exactly what they're trying to say. It gets lost in translation. So, so this came through on a Friday night, and I'm just destroyed. It's like, what's wrong? They've spent ages choosing these images, and now at the last beck and call, and they're going, oh, do you have more images shot around them? But if I don't know what the problems are, so I've gone back to tell me what the problems with the images are, because there's no point me sending more images to you if you haven't told me what's wrong with the other ones.
Yeah.
And then they come back and they apologize, and they said earlier this week and said, look, there's some focus issues, not quite in focus. There's some ghosting issues. There's some chromatic aberration issues, all of which the chromatic aberration and the ghosting is our lens problem. It's not you. The focus issue is focus, So they've highlighted on the images. So I've gone and looked at the images on a really good monitor.
Yeah.
Can't see any chromatic aberration, magnified to 400%. Yeah. Right. Even when they've got an arrow pointing where it's supposed to be, I can't see squat. It looks beautiful. Okay.
Wow. Wow.
The ghosting is I'm pointing directly into the sun and sunshot, and there is a little bit of flare, which some people like.
Yeah.
And it's not, but I mean, I'm shooting F-16, mind you, it's another problem. F-16 directly into the sun, beautiful starburst, and it's a tiny bit of flare. So there's nothing wrong with the lens. That's just, hey, you shoot directly in the sun, it's going to happen, One of the other ghosting ones was when I was photographing a waterfall in the pouring rain. There's a tiny drop in the water in one corner.
On your lens.
Which I didn't see, and so it's my bad. Yeah. What they didn't see is the three specks of dirt on one of the sky shots that when I was doing it close. Oh, look at those sensor spots.
Yeah.
And the other one, the focus, the only one that was focus issues was it was about a 2.5 second handheld shot. Everything's perfect. Everything's perfectly. Remember, this is a non-image stabilized lens, so it's like a two. I think it's like a 2 second long shot, handheld. Everything's perfectly sharp.
What were you doing trying to do handheld at 2 seconds?
I had no choice. Everything's perfectly sharp, but I'm photographing this surfer who's standing on the other side of this like a little inlet who's reflecting in the water with the sunset behind him, and he's moved ever so slightly, so he's got the tiniest bit. If you zoom into 200%, you can see he's got a slight bit of blur to him. So it's not a focus issue. Focus is perfect. Yeah, it's inevitable subject movement in such a slow shutter speed,
Yeah.
So I felt somewhat more more relieved, should I say, afterwards.
Yeah.
But
So
that's it. But what do I think of the lens? I think the lens, I said, for the price point, there's not any decent full frame, ultra wide angle lenses for that price. For $500-$600, and it's sharp from left to right, all the way across the frame, which is what you want.
Yeah,
it produces punchy, contrasty, sharp, beautiful coloured images, which is what you want. It's got almost no vignetting, which is what you want sometimes.
Nice.
It's really fast focus, which is what you want. Yep. And almost no, there's not much pin cushioning or anything else. And once again, this is a pre-production lens. I couldn't see much chromatic or if any chromatic aberration, which is one of the things they proud themselves about this lens.
Yep.
But this is all before the lens's profiles have been put out to Photoshop on Lightroom, which fixes a lot of those little pin cushioning issues chromatic aberration issues. So what little tiny faults there are with the lens are gone. And its big plus is it takes a 77mm filter.
Yeah,
which is one of the most, if you're in a 70 to 200mm 2.8 lens, they all take 77mm filters. You know, most 24 to 70s take a 77 or larger filter. And if it takes a larger one, you can get a step-down ring to fit onto a 77. So if you've already got some ND filters, it's going to go on.
Yeah.
Whereas something like the 15 to 30, A, it's a three and a half times, or two times more expensive lens, let's say. And then you've got to spend probably $1,000 on filters to get a full filter kit.
Right.
So all of a sudden, yeah, buying this lens is half the price, and it's got a significant saving in filter cost.
Most likely going to be compatible with the filters you've already got.
Exactly. And so if you're not a pro, not a working professional, but you're a good keen amateur or someone, or even a pro who only uses ultra wide angles once in a while for the occasional shot, this is the perfect lens. It's small, it's light, it's cheap, it's good.
Yeah.
Win, 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 win.
Yeah.
In my book.
Nice.
So, yeah, so I think they've come up with a real little winner. But the internet. The internet comes out. So, yeah, I'm waiting for it to be announced online so I can – I found out that it was going to be announced online by the rumor websites as opposed to from Tamron themselves.
Right.
So that's and the rumor sites were all right. The rumor sites got images of the lens, all the specs, some of my images also all released before the lens.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the pricing and when it was going to be released and how much it was going to be perfectly, you know.
Wow.
But I've been sort of reading through the blogs, the DP review people's things and stuff like, if it's as good as the 15 to 30, it might be an option for price and weight. So what? A lens that's half the price and half the weight. If it's as good as the twice as expensive one, it'll be a good lens. If it's not as good as the twice as expensive lens, it's not what? It's not going to be any good? Yeah. Madness.
Yeah.
This one we're looking down here. Somebody, this is, I love this sort of comment. The only comment is, I'll keep my trusty Canon 17-40 f4. Cool. Do so. You don't have to tell the world. What?
Yeah.
Why get on internet forum about a new lens that people who are looking to buy a new lens might be interested in?
Yeah.
To say, I want to keep what I've already got. Well, congratulations. You know, I don't go into a car yard. And the guy comes up to me and says, can I help me? I go, no, I'll keep the car I've got. I just thought I'd come here and tell you.
Yeah.
I thought I'd walk in here and say, I love the car, I'm keeping it. Just to let you know. Yeah. See, I've got to go to the car yard next door and tell them.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I love them. I haven't bookmarked any of these, so if I'm sort of flicking through some of the comments. My favourite one, I had to bookmark this, was I'm going to have to use the voice because I'm sure this is the guy's voice. The naming of HLD sounds suspiciously like the way someone drives a stepper motor, so HLD may be the equivalent of Canon's STM. Tends to have a slower peak speed than ultrasonic motors, but with much better inertia acceleration profiles. For example, Canon's EF 85mm 1.8 USM motor is insanely fast, but suffers from hunting overshoot. Same for Sigma's HSM motor in the 17-70. Canon's EF 50mm 1.8 STM has noticeably slower peak speed, but accelerates to full speed virtually instantly. Now, I've plotted the motion of these lenses during autofocus using a logic analyzer on a Sony body using various adapters. If you plot the motor velocity, the plot is curvy smooth with USM motors, e.g. takes a while to get up to speed, and then by the time it hits peak speed, the body is already commanding a slowdown, often leading to hunting overshoot, while it's a square rectangle instant acceleration up to full speed with STM lenses. Dude, you need to get a life.
Oh, dear,
I've plotted the motion of these lenses during autofocus using a logic analyzer.
And you reckon I'm bad?
I thought it might be your brother, your mother, your something. Because I'm thinking, there's someone I've got to introduce to Bruce. I guess whatever floats your boat, but I mean, maybe you should plug the logic analyzer into his own head. See if he can come up with some sort of clue as to why that would be a good thing to be doing. And people just go on again. Oh, I prefer this lens. This is silly. Why did they bring out that lens? Why wasn't it for Sony? Why isn't it for Pentax? Where's my Fuji one? It's like, it is what it is, guys. It is what it is.
So they're only doing Canon and Nikon mounts? Canon and
Nikon, yeah. Because, you know, as we talked about last week, we were talking about market share. And we know Nikon's lost 20-odd% of the share, but that's 75% market share right there.
Yeah.
All the other brands bundle into the last 25%. You go to the bloody the big vault.
Supply and demand.
Yeah. I mean, why if you're a small company, which Tamron effectively are, in the greater scheme of, you know, it's not a $1 trillion small company, you're not going to go, let's make a boutique product that's only going to be appealing to a very few people, that costs an awful lot to research and make, that we'll never make our money back on.
Yeah.
Not going to happen. I think it's a lovely lens. I think if it's the sort of thing you have a need for, great. Yeah, go out and test it and buy one of them. And but I was very honoured to have been chosen to do it, but disappointed with the way it turned out as far as what was viable to shoot and all that.
At least if they would have ever come back to you, you'd be a little bit more informed and in a position to say, well, I want to be able to shoot the type of images that I'm known for.
Yeah.
Rather than you pigeonholing me into genres that aren't my forte.
Well, one of the things I'm doing for them, I'm actually putting together, they don't know it yet, but they're gonna. I'm putting together and this is the marketing department, I'm putting together a how to do this going forward.
Right.
You know, because the way they did it, I mean, stuff like we finish the shoot, we finish uploading all the images, they choose all the images. Then they say, oh, we've got to send you the contract for the job.
Yeah, right.
After the job's completed, we better send you the paperwork to get signed, you know. At no stage was I asked to sign a non-disclosure agreement.
Wow. It's
just madness. You know? Now, I'm smart enough just to know that
that it goes without saying.
Yeah, they go, woohoo, put it on Facebook, look at my new lens I've got from Tamron that's not out for 2 or 3 months, you know.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch of just... the way it should be mapped out, the expectation of images. I mean, it's not their first time up to bat, you know. It should be done an awful lot better, you know. So I'm putting together a little thing there. I just came across another comment online, which is, you know, people who make judgments without ever having seen the lens or knowing anything about it. They should have made it a 9-blade diaphragm. 7 blades is not good for creating sun stars. And even though this lens is not so much for bokeh shots, 2.8 attempts to take some wide bokeh, and again, 9 blades would have made it perfect. So just I've got some photos online, I've gone, Sunstar looks okay to me. And I put one of my F-16s on with beautiful, it makes beautiful sun stars. It really does.
Yeah, right.
And this is the one, though, if you look closely, it's right by the sun. It's got all these dirt spots on the sensor, which I haven't bothered to clean up, because these are all images sent to them to decide on, not they haven't been finished and finalized. So have a click on that photo there, because this is one of the ones they complained about.
Yep.
So first one, not a bad sun star.
No.
Not bad at all, yeah. But can you see just towards the end of it, there's that little curved little bit of I don't think that looks unappealing.
No.
It's fairly standard when you're aiming directly.
Yep.
And
then there's a more circular sun flare just above it.
Yeah, there is, and a little bit just behind it. A
couple of lits to the right. But I can see all the dirt above the sun.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, But that's pretty much straight out of camera. There's nothing done to that image at all, you know.
Nice.
Yeah, you could imagine you could clean that up quite nicely and have a pretty decent image, you know.
Yeah.
So let's use that one as our image for the podcast.
Okay.
For the week. And there's a link there as well for the lens if anyone wants to go check it out.
Cool.
And I've got a couple of other links. I did do a little YouTube video of photos taken with the lens. And I even wrote a blog post
on
my experiences using it. So if anyone wants to, I've been very busy.
Right.
Not really, but I'll spend a few minutes.
Yeah, right. Cool.
So there's a couple of the links there for that stuff too. And the last thing, because I've got nothing else to talk about this week, nothing else. I was wanting to talk about this last week, and it was on the second page of notes, and I forgot to look at it.
Oh, okay.
It was DP Review did a user poll about what would they like to see in the upcoming Nikon, Canon mirrorless SLRs. And basically on any of the mirrorless SLRs, what's the thing that's most important to users or things that bugs them most, all that kind of stuff? Because you hear all the time when people talk about Sony, oh, the batteries are no good and all this sort of stuff. The things that I thought were kind of interesting was sports-ready autofocus system. 10% of all people voted that was an important thing to something, because it's not in my wheelhouse, I would never consider. But right. Sports 3D autofocus, bang, and lifelike viewfinder, 10%. There's 20% right there. It might be the same people. But things like battery life, not there at all. Oh, sorry, it is 4%. Only 4% of people are worried about the length of time a battery lasts. Yet you can do it any camera store that wants to sell off a Sony, first thing they mention is batteries.
Right.
But for the actual consumer out there looking to buy it, only 4 out of every 100 is concerned about that, which is you know, the good quality video, less than 4%.
Wow.
Now, that really astounded me. I thought, well, that's, you know, you think this stuff's really popular for video. Well, out of all the people who replied, now remembering this is a photo website, most of them had no interest in video.
Yeah, right.
Effective weather sealing, 3%.
What? Exactly. Really?
People concerned about the thing not getting wet. It's very, very small.
So what were the big numbers?
Well, the big numbers were stuff like lens compatibility with existing lenses. So that's something Nikon and Canon's going to come up against. That was a 13%. High-resolution sensor. Well, you know, people are idiots. Sports-ready AF, lifelike viewfinder, in-body stabilization, compact size. That kind of rounds out your top 6 to 7.
Right.
But I just thought it was really interesting. In the low end, things like lightweight, video, weather sealing, all things
that surprises me.
Aren't important. So, yeah, I thought I'm going to send that to you to put up. It's a little chart kind of thingy. I just thought that it's just really interesting when you hear the thoughts of a fair sample size of people about what's actually important versus what people tend to harp on about, you know?
Yep.
So that was something I thought last week I thought was of interest. So there you go.
That's nice.
It from me. I want to stop talking for a bit because I've got a sore throat because I'm getting man flu.
Of course. Again. Well, we got a couple of emails this week from David Marland.
Oh, lovely David Marland.
The first one was, I saw this on the BBC and thought you should see it. Although it is unlikely many of the Magnificent Seven of us will go to London to see this exhibition, this short video is well worth watching. Some of these photos appear very fresh and give insights into how people lived in that era. Most people think of old photos, think solely of the daguerreotype. The salted paper technique was invented in the 1830s by Henry Fox Talbot, about the same time as the daguerreotype. It was not quite as popular in the US, as in the US, Mr. Morse of Morse code fame obtained a license from Daguerre and was a lively entrepreneur. But daguerreotypes were crisp one-offs on tin, while the salt paper approach used negatives and positives and could be reproduced en masse and were a little fuzzy by comparison. Enjoy. And he's given us a link to the BBC website with this short video about this exhibition that's happening in England up until, I think it was September the 9th, it finishes, of all these salted paper technique prints. And, they're in pretty good condition given their age.
Yeah. So he sent a couple of emails, did he?
The second one said, guys, I couldn't help but notice this. Some bloke, a.k.a. GL, posted on his Facebook about a new lens from Tamron.
What?
One of the posts featured a video taken during the shoot of our Glyn doing his stuff. As a promo, it shows our Glyn lining up the shots, taking the photo, then the screen fades to the photo just taken, complete with metadata on focal length, aperture and shutter speed. Then, at 1 minute and 9 seconds, there he is, capering among these rocks like a kid by the seaside, taking a handheld shot down at the water, rushing the resulting picture as absolutely razor, razor, razor. They come in triple packs these days. Sharp rocks with live, lovely, creamy water, and underneath the shutter speed is 30 seconds. Wow, who would believe it? Our Glyn, handheld. How does he do it? By the way, a very big thanks to Glyn, Bruce, and the Tamron people for my Tamron pack of goodies. It arrived today. All the best, David Marland.
Now, first up, just because you can't, David, doesn't mean everyone else can't. Okay? just putting that out there straight away, okay?
Right.
Just because you can't doesn't mean everyone else can't. And what happens is when the producer of the video has access to all your photos and also all the footage, and he puts A and B together, because where I was, I didn't get anything decent photo-wise. He just inserted that. But he raised a very important point that just reminded me. Tamron got back to me early this week and said, by the very end of last week, saying, finally got the prize packs up, getting them out today. Hence why right. Dave's now got it. Mind you, a couple of days later, they came back and said, oh, can you get Dave to give us a street address? Because the couriers don't deliver to P.O. boxes. But then they came back to me yesterday and said, yeah. Glenn, we've got a problem. They said, right. the people from OS overseas who won them, we can't send it to them. I said, why? And I said, well, we can only use couriers. And it's going to cost right. $130 per person to send to them.
What?
I know. I said, you can't get someone to take down the mail and post it for 20 or 30 bucks. No, they don't have that system set up, blah, blah, blah. So bear with me.
Okay.
I'm in a week or two's time, a couple of weeks' time, three, four, soon, eventually, I'm going to go out to Tamron, pick up said packs, bring them home, package them myself, and send them away.
Okay.
However, I'm in Queensland this week. I've got shoots on most of next week. I'm in Fiji the following 2 weeks. So it's just going to get a little bit tight for time. Yeah, so I apologize for our overseas friends and wonderful listeners and winners. It may just be a Christmas present, maybe.
So, yeah, I was just about to say that. dear. Well, the only other thing, the last thing we got from a listener was from Carl Hemmings, who said, hi, guys, I know you both don't use Lightroom, but for those who do, here's a good tip when making realistic HDR photographs. And it's a LightroomKillerTips.com link to a video produced by Scott Kelby. And it's called The Shocking Truth About Lightroom HDR. It's like, really? The Shocking Truth?
Well,
it's really?
Scott Kelby.
It was a little over-dramatized. Well, it is
Scott
anyway.
Kelby.
Yeah, so... So basically, the punchline is use 32-bit mode, not 16-bit mode.
Well, it is Scott Kelby.
But I will put that link in the show notes for anyone that is interested in producing HDR images out of Lightroom and or Photoshop, because he does compare the two approaches. Like, you can do HDR from within Lightroom, but you can also select your multiple images in Lightroom and go edit these in Adobe Photoshop Pro HDR, and the Photoshop versions come out a lot sharper than the Lightroom versions for some reason. You would think it was all running on the same code, but obviously there is some sort of a difference in the way Lightroom and Photoshop respectively generate their HDR output. So
yeah.
I'll put that there for anyone that wants to check that out.
One last thing I just remembered, because I keep remembering. I got approached today by a mate of mine who I can't talk about just yet, to possibly run a very small sort of collaborative tour to Tanzania and Zanzibar, possibly next August.
Wow.
Four people only plus me.
Wow.
And what's happening, they're looking at doing this collaboration where they get like a photographer from America and a photographer from England and some different photographers from around the place, and they all bring four people together. And those four people have their own vehicle with the photographer who's going with them. So five people to a safari vehicle and going out on safari for animals to Tanzania.
Right.
And then a follow-up to Zanzibar for street photography and all sorts of other cool stuff. Early days yet. It's just waiting for the info to come through. But if anyone's got a bit of an inkling to maybe think to want to maybe come, drop me a line. I'll keep you in the loop.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
So August next year.
Nice. Well, the reason that we are recording on a Wednesday night...
Yeah, what? You got work?
No, well, I do have work, but that's not the reason. The reason is a mate of mine from Sydney, who's another motorcyclist, just got himself a new bike.
Yeah.
And he said to me probably 4 or 6 weeks ago now, he said, would you be interested in doing a two-day road trip?
Oh.
And I went, yeah, absolutely. So we're heading off tomorrow morning. That's Thursday morning. He's in Sydney, I'm in Gosford. We're going to meet up at Pete's Ridge, which is not far from Gosford, and we're going to go as far north as Walker, which is about an hour west of Tamworth, tomorrow, and we're staying the night there, and then we're coming back the next day, but via a different route. And I'm going to take my camera and try and do some photography while we're motorcycling.
Nice.
Yeah.
Take a tripod and do some astro?
I don't know that I'm going to be out in the middle of the night doing astro because the forecast for Walker for tomorrow night is for -6.
Excellent. Nice, crisp, clear air.
Very.
-6. My goodness.
Yeah, so that's going to be a nasty start on Friday morning. It'll all be past history by the time this podcast comes out, but yeah. So I don't know if I'm going to take a full-size tripod. I might just be taking the GorillaPod with me and, you know, getting by with that.
Yeah.
Simply because my tripod is too big to fit in the pannier bags on the side of the bike, so... Yeah. Yeah, but I'm looking forward to it anyway.
That sounds awesome, dude. Just be yeah. safe, be careful.
Yep, yeah. Definitely.
Don't run out of any kangaroos or anything like that.
I will try not to.
Yeah.
So, yeah. All right. Well,
so we'll try and get an episode in next week.
Yep.
So my schedule's pretty nutso next week, but
now,
it's possible.
Where did you say you're off to next week?
Well, this weekend I'm in Brisbane.
Yeah,
and I've got a couple of commercial shoots during the week, which is and they're a couple of hours from here, so that's going to tie up a lot of time. I'm not sure how much free time I'll have, and then I'm off to Fiji on Friday.
Right.
So
okay,
it's a tricky week.
All right. Well, we'll play it by ear next week.
Yeah. See how we go.
Awesome.
If not, goodbye, everyone. It has been nice knowing you.
See you, mate.
Same, Bruce, in case the bike trip doesn't work out well.
Thank you. we'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
ShutterZinkPodcast.com.
AnotherAudioTo.com quality podcast.
For questions, comments, and feedback, email theboys@ShutterZinkPodcast.com.